You're listening to the Bathtub Refinishing Podcast. Powered by Bathtub Guys Refinishing. We discuss the refinishing industry, interview owners and operators, and give tips to business owners and entrepreneurs. Now, here's your host, Daniel Montalvo.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we have two guests, one returning, one first time. I'm going to go ahead and reintroduce Jack from Hooked on Refinishing. How you doing, man?
You're doing good. How are you?
Good, man. We're happy to have you here, man. And then I got my cousin Julian from All Tub and Tile. I've mentioned it a few times on the podcast that I have family that does like the same thing. And like we all kind of grew up in the business in a way. And I've decided to have him on for this one because I think it'd be cool. There's a lot of things that I wanted to talk to you about. And I feel like he could put some input in and maybe learn something too. So I think it's going to be cool.
I think it's going to be a good one.
That's going to be good.
Yeah. So since the last time we spoke, man, how's everything been going, man, with Hooked on Refinishing?
It's been doing exceptionally well. I've come to a cross point that I'm getting more work than I can do.
Okay.
So it's putting me in position. It's readied me up. I've bought two of everything. I have another pro contractor 7.0 I just bought recently. Okay. And I'm getting the other one, just maintenance, new filters, stuff like that. But now I got two machines. There's nothing wrong with the other machine. Mm-hmm. I got six guns. I got all double like material. I'm ready for another person. Just
backing up.
I go to Elevation Church on Sundays. Okay. It's actually Love Week right now. And it's basically 7 days of helping out underprivileged kids, homeless, packing lunches. There's going to be a day I'm hosting, which is on Monday. It will be at Cocoa Beach.
Okay.
It's going to be about 30 kids, foster kids. They all know how to swim. They're all going to have a parent with them. But it's going to be like a surf event, teaching them how to surf 2 hours.
That's cool.
Food, drinks, all that. So, yeah, it's going to be cool. Everything's been going good. I'm wanting to advance to the point where I'm going to need to hire somebody soon. And I met somebody through the church that's son just graduated high school, just got a truck. So he's starting August 5th.
Nice. So,
yes, sir.
Nice. Okay. That's the best way to teach people, especially in the beginning. The best way to have another person is just have them like an apprentice, man. Like someone who genuinely has interest in learning a trade. And, you bring them under your wing and guide them. That's going to teach you a lot about, and I know you've had people in the past, but it's going to teach you a lot about how people learn in general. Sometimes when you hire people with experience, they like do things their own way. When you kind of get to mold them how you want, that's awesome. And then it teaches you also like, you know, how to deal with different styles of how people do things and stuff like that. I mean, I've even though we've tried to mold people that we've hired in the past to the way we do things, everyone's always a little different. It's good that you're doing it, man, because I've had this conversation with refinishers before. We were just talking about it earlier today where you don't want to be in a position where your ads are working too well and you're not able to feed the demand because one day the demand might not be there or to get that much work might cost more money. And throughout all that time, you could have been making it with somebody there. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been having helpers here and there, but I like the profit margins. I knew I could do it by myself.
For sure.
And if I want somebody to work for me, it's usually I'll have the helper come for 2 or 3 days. I'll let them know, like, hey, you're not an employee. You're just here to help tape, grab some things for me, help unload the truck, clean up, you know, do the whole thing. But when it comes to the job, it's still me, you know, and they're okay with that, but that's who I'm hiring. Mm-hmm. And so trying to see if this person's employee, like I can actually have them an employee, typically it doesn't happen that way because the people that are needing this type of side jobs, they already have their own hustle. They're already doing something. They just want to make extra money on the side.
I got you.
So I just started talking to this lady at the church, and I talked to her son. Her son's great. He's very adamant. Now I have a new mindset of like, oh, he really wants to work for me. He wants to learn things. Let me see if I can teach him what I do. And so I've been talking to him on the phone. He's been excited. So, yeah, we're going to see how it works.
That's cool, man. I'm happy for you, man, and I hope it goes well. I know hiring people, it is the biggest, I would say aside from getting the work, it is like the next biggest problem. Mm-hmm. It's like finding qualified people who are good. We're in a time where a lot of people don't want to work. And people online will negate that and pretend like it's not the truth. Like people are lazy. And part of the reason is, you know, instant gratification from their whole life. You know, online they see people making money doing stuff and they're like, damn, you know, I could be doing that and making it. Why am I going to bust my ass doing this? But at the end of the day, we all, like the world needs laborers to make the world go round, man. And like relative to a lot of other jobs, this is not super labor intensive. And it also pays pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, my guys get paid $30 an hour. The average wage for somebody who has a bachelor's degree is like $24.
Yeah, something crazy.
Like, yeah. Imagine like getting $20,000, $30,000 in debt to then make like barely more than someone who paints bathtubs, bro.
And you're going to be in debt for
years.
Yeah, so you... face the fear to start making big payments.
So you know, there's a lot of good that comes with that, man, and I hope it goes well. With us, man, since the last time we spoke, we've really gotten, it's a combination of luck, but also just tightening down on a lot of the, I guess a lot of the liberal ways we were with our hiring and how we treated the guys. We're a little bit more like running a tighter ship now. Mm-hmm. And with that has come more like responsible people. We used to like really want to be like the cool boss who doesn't give them shit because they know what they're doing. That shit doesn't work, man.
No, they take advantage of it.
They take advantage of it, bro. The moment that they smell, you know, regular people like us who have businesses, who have that discipline, we're like, fuck yeah, someone's not going to be on our ass. These other people, they need someone on their ass, bro. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people don't have goals or aspirations or like dreams, man. They need somebody to like show them the bigger picture, show them that you're in a good position right now. And so we went from just having two guys and a helper to now we have like five full-time sprayers, send them on jobs every day. Sometimes they do two jobs a day. So like, you know, like I was telling him earlier, like we did 10 jobs yesterday.
Wow. That's wild.
That is wild.
With five guys working a morning job and afternoon job.
That's 2 weeks worth of work for me sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same here, man.
Yeah. So it's been cool, man. And the good thing is it's just, the stars kind of aligned too. So there was a company that came in town called Specialized Refinishing. And I guess they were trying to push some expansion. Something happened that I guess they were having trouble advertising in this market. I mean, I was telling him, I'm pretty sure I'm semi-responsible for that because I outspend everybody. It's not even close. I spend like $15,000 a month on Google ads.
Stay there.
Yeah. But
I'm not marketing on Google. So.
They were here in Florida for 6-7 months in Orlando and Tampa. And all of their guys got let go. So they all came. One came, got a job, told the others, and now I have three trained technicians who do a good job.
Like, oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and
that is some luck.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's luck, but it's also, I feel like being able to keep them is the hardest part, right? Because they're not just going to go work for anybody. This company was treating it legit. You know, like they had them all W-2. They had them all, you know, with certain like, payment incentives for performance, and they were paying them hourly, the equivalent to like 27 and something and like an hour, which, you know, I'm not in the position where I could do the type of performance incentives that company was doing. But what I did say is like, hey, I'll be like, start you at 28, you'll cap out at 30. And the best incentive I could do for you is if you get a review, I will give you a bonus. So I give them a bonus of $25 a review. That's my board over there. The check marks are $25. Anybody who gets a review, it doesn't matter. Even if they get the same customer to write three of them, I don't care, because that review is worth so much more than $25.
Yeah, and you know, this just shows preparation's key, because you don't just have to prepare for your job, just your preparation in business in itself. Yep. When that company did fail and they needed to let go of those people, you were prepared that if this were to happen, I can take this on.
Yep.
So
yep.
You're in already a preparation for growth.
Yeah,
situation.
And so. that's, you know, something that Danny from Alliance over in California told me. He's like, always hire, always be hiring, always be scouting and recruiting and looking for new people. Even if you're not ready to take them on right now, you never know, right? And I had gone through the revolving door of like crazy people. I told you the story about the two crazies who came in here. Not just that, but just people who I hired and they sucked, and I hired, but I had the equipment, the vehicles, everything in place already. So exactly like you said, we were prepared, and when they came, it just made a huge difference. I mean, I would say we were prepared to have two of the new guys for sure. I was a little wary about the last guy, and it wasn't because of anything with him. It was us, right? Like, you never know if you're going to have enough work for that extra person, especially when you kind of know, you know, your schedule and how things go. But one of the things I learned is that you end up just being able to take on more opportunity that you might not have gotten before. For example, you know, we always want to be a week, maybe two booked out. That's like the goal. But there is a lot of value in having that extra hand. The one that if someone calls you, hey, I need it tomorrow, like they pay tomorrow price.
Yeah.
And having someone ready for that, I mean, it's worth it, man. So that extra hand, I mean, most of the time, it'll be the week before and he has a few jobs on the schedule and we'll load him up with last minute jobs the week of because people want it now.
And they'll pay more.
They'll always
pay more.
Yeah. We've been doing, I remember I told you about the inlay system that we were doing with the fiberglass floor and all that.
I was doing that as well.
Yeah. We sell some of those last minute sometimes and it'll be like $1,000 for a tub. I mean, like the inlay, I charge them $450, sometimes $500, and then the tub, you know, $495 is what we charge.
I've ran into one problem with the inlays. If it can be the construction of the layout of the fiberglass insert that's already there,
mm-hmm.
If sometimes lots of warping will happen and stuff like that, you want to make sure there's a downslope going to it. Because if it's flat, if it's very flat, and there's edges where the inlay is, the edges, water will sit on those edges, and they have to actually manually clean around those edges for it to not sit there. Sometimes it's perfect where you don't have to worry about that, but you can run into a very flat fiberglass floor that if there's no inlays there, water will do its natural thing and make its way to the drain. But if there's edges where the inlay is, water can sit. If the shower's hitting, this water's splashing to the edges, it will sit there.
I had one issue with the inlay. That was the only one I ever had an issue with, and it was something like that. But then when we managed to get it off. It took an undertaking to get that off.
Absolutely.
It had a missing spot of glue where, like, the adhesive wasn't on there so the right way.
Pressy up and down on that spot.
Yeah, and then water was getting under. It started to stink. So what we did was we cut that off, rebuilt it with Bondo, and then actually around the seam, we caulked it with silicone. And that stopped the issue because it was, like you said, it was flat in an area, and like it was like a little bit not sitting flush. You see mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, you could see it like black, kind of like a grout line.
Yeah.
So we sealed it with silicone and then never had an issue with it again. I think that's something that people, you know, should consider also. This is designed to sit flat. So you shouldn't see the outline, really. That adhesive is supposed to get right up into the edge. So, you know, that's something that you could do too. Cause we used to Bondo them, but what would happen is the Bondo would just crack. And I think it's because Bondo doesn't really flex like that. It dries kind of hard. So what we've been doing is just treating it like a caulk line and just putting silicone on it.
Yeah. Whenever you're dealing with any fiberglass structure at all, there's always going to be some bend to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you can never use a Bondo mm-hmm. as your main focus for fixing the repair.
Yep.
No, there has to be a fiberglass construct with what you're putting on. Has to be.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, Bondo doesn't last at all.
No.
Just customers in the past always say it cracked again. It opened up again. It's always a big problem we have, too.
If it's a metal floor and if it's a cast iron floor, I've noticed Bondos work amazingly well. If it's fiberglass and it's on the wall, something they're not going to be pressing, you could probably get away with doing fiberglass over the, or you could do Bondo over the fiberglass patch that you did to fill in any of those voids to get a sand down. So you have to do three fiberglass patches, sand it down.
You could also use like the fiberglass resin too. I think that is for you know what one I'm talking about, right? The one that's like liquidy.
Yes.
That one, I feel like it works and it reinforces better than like traditional Bondo glass.
I use boat fiberglass repair kits. I use the same type of material. They're using same cloth, same fiberglass resins. But I use the Bondo glass as a filler afterwards, mm-hmm. typically, and that works well.
Yeah, but all in all, the inlays have been good. What we do is we treat it like a traditional repair, and then on top of that, we'll add the inlay. So we still shoot foam under just to give it some extra support.
Froth packs or which foam?
We just use like I've used the froth pack before, but honestly, if you're gonna do the inlay too, I feel like it's overkill for most of it. We use like the regular like stuff that's for like 2-inch gaps, the one that comes in a can.
Yeah, it's $5 stuff. That's great. Works great.
Yeah, exactly. And we just use it for that, just to give it a little bit more support. We bondo and sand down the crack, and then we will go with the inlay over it. What I've noticed is that adhesive for the inlay really keeps that crack from opening again, man. It like holds it really well. It's tough. And I've tested it. You know, I've gone to the job sites and stepped on it. There's no give. There's no creaking noise. I mean, that stuff dries crazy hard. So it's been good with us with using the inlays. But I do agree with you. You know, people need to make sure that it's nice and level, because if not, you're going to have problems with water getting in there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, today I had my first inlay measure.
Yeah, I took him to...
Yeah, me and Danny won. He helped me measure it.
That's the hardest part of the whole operation.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, on some of these, this one was a basic tub. I was just showing him more or less what he wants to look for, but man, there are some complex ones, man. We've done these showers where like it's like this. It's like a puzzle piece kind of shape.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I showed him one too.
Yeah, you have to get rounded edges.
The sides are super thin, and then it gets super wide.
Yeah.
There's a marker I use. It's like I'll go around the outside of the entire thing. I'll get a paper mold, and I'll put it in there, and I'll press it onto it. I'll take it out, then I'll cut out, put it back to see if it fits, and usually it's perfect, or I do a couple of things. But you marker lay the floor.
Okay.
And then you put the paper on top of that, and then you basically got your outline. Depending, like the puzzle pieces, that'd be a lot harder to do.
Yeah, that when it's a weird shape like that, I just make sure I got, you know, I mark everything, even though sometimes one side is equal to the other. I always double check, because today it happened. Yep. When he measured, the tub was tapered at the end. It was, and I checked it 3 times in front of his face. It was 15 inches this way.
And then 16.
And then 15 and a half over here.
Yep.
And I was like, huh? And I kept checking. I'm like, that's how it is?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of tubs where there'll be like 18 out here, and then when you get all the way over here, 16. But you look directly at it, it's exactly like, dude, this looks
the same.
Looks the same.
Yeah, and that's why I always double, triple check everything. And
measure every corner.
Yeah, yep. And with the showers, you got to measure the midpoint of the drain to make sure they're going to get that drain cut out good. And I was losing sleep over one, but it came out good. It came out good because I forgot to measure one of the sides, and they guessed, and they got it right.
You can be bigger in the drain. You can be bigger because it's all falling down in it, mm-hmm. right? You can be bigger. You cannot be smaller. Don't ever go smaller.
Yeah, so.
Have you ever had to cut an inlay more than it came?
Like, no. Because it wasn't correctly? There was one day where I thought we were going to have to do it. My technician, Ralph, was calling me like, yo, this thing doesn't fit. And I'm like, impossible. And he's like, it doesn't. I'm like, how about you flip it upside down? And he flipped it upside down, and it was the right size. And it's just that he had the side with the texture on down. I was like, you freaking dummy. Like, the heck?
They come with big numbers on the back.
I know. I just, sometimes people, they don't use their brain, right?
Yeah, that's funny.
But it's all right. But yeah, I thought we were going to have to cut it that day. He's like, I could cut it down the size. I'm like, wait, try flipping it. Like, and then he's like, oh, it does fit.
That's funny. Would you guys, so I'm learning this. I talked to both of the owners, Eddie at Midwest Chemicals.
Yep.
Eddie and his dad. They said, they swear by it. They said, dude, people that are sanding any tubs or anything like that, wasting your time. And I'm like, well, I think sanding for me is mainly to get all the extra big scum and stuff off of it. Because he's like, well, you can sand as much as you want. We've used our product on a sanded tub, a non-sanded tub. It's the exact same adhesion.
Yes.
And I said, okay. So basically the whole premise is to, you need to get that thing squeaking with some denatured alcohol at the end of it. And if that thing's that clean, you're good to go.
So for a long time, we never used to etch. I never used to even use like acid etch. I use it now for a different reason. I'll get to that. But we used to just use their industrial cleaner, which is like the Purple Zep. It's like the same stuff. It's like watered down acid. Mm-hmm. And it's just to give it a mild edge. It's really primarily to clean it.
To clean it. That's what I use as a cleaner.
Yeah. And then we'll use denatured alcohol and then, you know, do the spray system on it. And we never, as long as you're thorough, you never would really get an issue. Now, I will say, using the acid etch, the actual glass etch that they sell, that is a difference maker for me. Because it's different when you're the guy doing it, right? You know how thorough you are.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hire people...
Terrified.
Yeah, yep. So That acid etch is like a safety. It's like a little insurance policy, because once you put it on the tub, there's no going back. Like it etches it in 5 seconds. You can literally put it on and wipe it right off, and it already etched it.
Yeah, I mean, once you watch it roll down and then you clean that spot, you'll see a mark there.
Yeah.
You'll see it.
Yeah,
I haven't got to use it yet.
Yeah, well, we
definitely got to.
We use it because of that, and it's made a big difference with us. But, you know, if you do the system the way that they tell you, it'll work. It's just that when you have guys working for you, some of them are knuckleheads, and some of them just aren't as thorough as you would be.
There's so many different ways to actually refinish a tub. Like, some of the steps are mainly the same. Uh-huh. A lot of people do them in a different order. Like when it comes to sanding, cleaning, I've noticed people sand first. I've seen it all. What I think would be really cool is to put like a tub up here and like have whatever refinishers in here and be like, how would you
tackle it?
Tackle this.
That's step a good by idea. Step?
That'd be cool.
That's
yeah.
A cool idea.
I want to do something like that. So this is one thing I wanted to mention to you, is the thing I was alluding to before, is that I got approached to help host like a tub refinishing networking like convention thing. I actually have the guy coming on Monday to, he manufactures a product called Ecopel. It's right there.
I've heard of them.
Okay, so he is like adamant, he wants to like do something not like
water-based, right?
No, his stuff is epoxy.
Oh, it is epoxy.
Yeah. Okay. But it's a hybrid, and I did an episode with him. If you want to check it out, he explains like, you know, the science behind it and stuff. But he sells it as a DIY product. He's trying to get into the professional space, right? But aside from all that, he wants to do like an event for refinishers. He doesn't want his product to be sponsored or whatever. He just wants to host it. And he asked me to help him host it, plan the event and stuff. And he wants me to get people to come. So that's what I was going to say. Like, I think it'd be cool, network, meet with people, see how people do things, make content out of it, and just like kind of meet other people who are like-minded, man.
Bring my spray equipment,
or? If you want. You don't have to. What we're really gonna do is it's kind of be like a trade show event or something like that, where all the different refinishers come and we have people speaking and answer questions, meet people, network, stuff like that. More like that.
What time is that gonna be at?
He wants to do it sometime between October and November.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's plenty of time. We're still in the early talks of it, but he wants to do it in Boston, or they were considering doing it in Florida. I like Florida too.
Florida sounds good.
Well, and this is my thing. I was like, hey, you know, not just because I live here, because I'll go, but people will make an excuse to come to Florida. Like, oh, you know, I'll go there. We'll do that thing. Then we'll go to the parks. They'll make a weekend out of it. You
go
know
to
what
the
I mean?
Beach, do sign.
Exactly. So, regardless, it's something that's in the works. And like, I've been telling everybody that I know about it, because I really think it's going to be cool and valuable. And there's nothing like it right now. You know,
I think he came to Miracle Method.
He might have.
And did an actual spray on a tub with us and showed us the product.
Okay.
So I think I've met the guy before.
You might have. His name's Patrick.
Yeah, I believe so. He ate at that, what's that, burger joint next to Miracle Method? No, that's over by me.
Yeah, that you're.
It's a small little burger joint. It's like called Burger Shack or something. Yeah, he ate there with us.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, man, the product is good. Even the original, so the original Ecopel was a pour-on material.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was finicky, but if you get the hang of it, it was a crazy like durable coating. It dries like this thick, and like you could hit that shit with a hammer and nothing happens to it. It doesn't chip. The thing is, it was a little bit too finicky for DIYers, so he made a roll-on version of it, or increased the open time a little bit so you could work with it. It still self levels and everything, and he sold 150,000 units of that on Amazon.
That's crazy.
That is fucking insane.
We should probably get into something like that.
Well, that's
make
what
our
I'm
own
saying.
Kit.
Goodness.
Make our own kit and sell it.
But, you know, like, he wants to get into the professional space now, so he made, like, a spray-on version.
Okay.
And it has really good self-leveling capabilities. It still dries really thick. You have to use a thicker needle for it on the gun.
Like a 5 needle?
I believe it's a 2.5, something like that.
That's smaller than what I'm using to spray tubs.
Are you? What
I'm
are you using?
I'm using a 3.
Are you using a 3?
I use a 3 to spray tubs.
You're crazy.
That's why my stuff comes out like glass.
That's crazy. You don't have issues with running or anything?
No.
Yeah, because we use a two needle for multi-spec.
Okay, are we reading the same measurements here?
It might be.
I use a 5 needle for multi-spec.
It might be different with. It might be different between the needles that they use for the Titan guns to Fuji, right? Because you use Fuji.
I use Graco.
Or Graco. It might be different.
It is different. Yeah. 5 is the one we originally used, right?
The bigger ones.
I think I might have a gun just sitting in my truck. I'll show you.
Okay, we'll talk about it after. But anyway, you need a thicker needle. It's like a. But it's a good product. Now, the only thing is, and I asked him about it, the whole epoxy thing, epoxy yellows, I asked him about that. He was like, this is a hybrid. We call it epoxy, you know, because it really is primarily epoxy, but it is a hybrid with something else that keeps it from yellowing. So, it's a good product. And
it's UV resistant is what
he said. He says it's UV resistant. And
I test. I have two, the sample pieces they give you from Midwest Chemicals.
Yep.
I put some on my roof, ones that I know I'll never sell. Like there's like a camouflage, a yellow one. And I just threw them on my roof. Dude, that stuff is great.
Yeah.
That stuff is awesome. That doesn't yellow.
We've painted cars with Midwest stuff. Not painted it for a customer, but like my brother bought a little Japanese truck a few years ago, the little mini trucks. Mm-hmm. And he painted it with Midwest. Nothing ever happened to it. Like I used to have a 1989 Camaro. It was the car I had in high school. And like one time my dad hit it and fucked up the bumper and he fixed it for me and he sprayed it with Midwest paint and that shit never gave me an issue, never came off or anything.
Interesting.
Great paint.
Yeah. But also Midwest will tell you on their website that you could use their paint for cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff that's used for tubs is like universal. Yep. And it works in different, in different situations. So, but man, this event thing that we're planning, it's going to be cool, man. I think it's going to be a good opportunity. I talked to Danny from Alliance. He said he'll fly out from California, wherever it is. Obviously, I'll be there. I'm sure Jonathan will be there. My friend Ruben. I'm sure Carlos will probably come. It'd be a cool thing to do.
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, so, and I told Julian to come too, so.
Yeah, I already told him yes, I'm down to go.
Yeah, because it's just a thing, and for the refinishing industry, there's no one who's done it yet, so I think it's going to be cool. So as far as something else I wanted to ask you, so I know you went through a little bit of a thing with Facebook. What happened with that, with the ads? That you were having an issue with them, and they took down your account or something?
So Facebook and I... we had our bouts for a minute. I was about 3 months down, no ads, so everything was just residual word of mouth. So I was definitely paying the bills, I was definitely making money, but it had a lot of extra time off. And I utilized that to learn other avenues of advertising.
Yep.
So Facebook going down for me was the best thing that's ever happened to me because I've learned two more marketing techniques that I was forced to learn.
Okay.
Because I got comfortable doing what was easiest and well known, which was Facebook. But I didn't really think about the repercussions. What's going to happen if this stops?
Yep.
So once it stopped for me, I was like, okay, well, I need to figure this out. I door knocked. I started going to every management company. I hit all the communities, talked to the real estate brokerages, the owners of all these places. And I got some good work coming in. And then I got into the commercial side.
Nice.
So, yeah, I've been doing residential for 2 years, which, by the way, I don't know if you guys noticed today, March 2 years of me being business.
Wow.
Nice, man. Congrats. Today,
yep.
Yeah, and then, so, and you're here today. That's cool.
Yeah, I thought that was a coincidence. So, yeah, it was cool. I've been doing whatever I could to get people. I've been posting different pictures, type of things like that. I got into Google Ads a little bit, which Google Ads are good if you started with Google. Mm-hmm. All my stuff was Facebook related, so all my reviews, Facebook. I got barely any reviews on, I think maybe 10 reviews on Google Ads, and that's still more than my any of my competitors in the area. And I don't know how they're getting their work. They don't post before and afters. They don't do nothing. I don't know how they're getting their work. No clue. I think they're just commercial side.
It might also just be still using traditional paper advertising and stuff. There's a lot of older folk near the coasts, and a lot of them respond better to stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that internet stuff isn't going to work. It's just that like a lot of the companies might just not be doing it. If you're first to market or like one of the first ones doing that stuff, man, you're going to, when the population starts to get younger and younger, which it's going to, because naturally, like, Orlando and Central Florida is getting way too expensive. People are going to have to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And they're going to start going over there, man, and you're gonna corner that market, like, quick. And you're already kind of doing it.
I found out a couple things. Like, I'll go on Zillow. I'll go on all these, like, rental properties that people put up for rent, and I see something that's been there for, like, 2-3 months, and then it has contact information for the person that's selling the place, and I see they have Formica countertops. Give them a call. Hey, I see that you got Formica countertops, and I see you've been trying to get this on the market. I can do that for a very cheap price. That would probably help you put somebody in this house.
Yeah.
And get some good pictures for you. I'll take some beautiful before and after pictures of the kitchen. It'll only cost you this. Absolutely. When can you have it done? I've had it happen.
A bunch
now.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know about the refinishing, man. It's just getting it out to them.
It's getting it out to them. So whenever you hear people, like, marketing or starting in areas, I'm starting to get excited for that. Not for the fact that, oh, this person could possibly take in more work. It only costs. Only need 250 jobs a year. Mm-hmm. You know, there's 20 million people in Florida. Once you got that mindset down, you realize that, oh, there's enough work for everybody.
Everyone, yeah. Exactly.
Everybody. So it's, lose the victim mentality of where you feel like this person's out for you because he's doing ads and he's doing exactly. Better. Yeah, I've had companies in the area ask me to work for me. So and I'm not going to put them on blast, but I've took a lot of their clientele.
I'm
the youngest guy in my area doing it. My face is on my brand. And these people they're staying hidden. They didn't do anything when it comes to putting their stuff on social media. They're not updating their customers. Like, I'd say stuff weekly on my own personal page.
Yeah.
And these people don't have any social platform, which is fine, but you lose an entire market doing exactly. That.
Well, it's fine until it's not. Until one day you wake up and nobody cares that you have an ad in the freaking Sentinel. You know, they don't care that you have a paper ad anymore. And whoever's been on the internet is going to reap the benefits. And it's not just because you've been there the longest. It's because you have the most experience with the platform. While they're still trying to figure it out, you've already leveraged it to a crazy extent.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I feel about Google and Facebook. Even though it's still accessible, the people who started with Google and Facebook were getting leads for like $5, bro. It was a different day. Like, I pay, 50, 60, 70 bucks for a lead, and that's good, better than a lot of my competitors, I'd say. But it took a lot of optimization, a lot of trial and error, and there's a lot of competition in Orlando and Kissimmee. Versus back in the day, like if we would have been doing Google Ads when my parents ran the business, we'd be Miracle Method. Like there's no denying it, man. Like I look back at what the cost per click used to be, like 2 or 3 cents, and then like the cost to get a lead was like $5. It's like crazy.
Well, I think you're already at that level just due to the fact that Miracle Method only has two guys at all times. I've never seen them with more than 3 workers.
That's crazy.
Yeah, ever.
There's a few locations. I looked into a franchising. It wasn't for me. I was just curious how they handle it. And you're right. Most of the locations have 2 to 3 people. There was a few outliers, and it was like in California, New York, and I believe the Orlando one had like 4. But the other ones had like 6, between 6 and 8. But their most profitable branch was one that had 6. And I think the biggest year they had was like $4 million. Like the individual branch.
It's pretty impressive.
That's insane. That's a lot of money.
But it's impressive, yes. But when you think about that they got there with like 8 or 6 people, is like actually insane.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Almost. Yeah. Well, we did 1.2 with 4 people.
Yeah.
So it's doable. I could see it, especially if they're doing primarily commercial.
Higher pricing.
Yeah. And they're higher pricing.
Way higher pricing.
And they're upsell gods. They upsell well.
That's you need to. When you walk in your house and you're doing a Formica countertop, you can only imagine they probably have vanities that are Formica as well. And, you know, when you're giving prices, make sure you're not giving full prices out. Make sure you're letting them know about a bundle.
Yeah.
You know, you can hook them up in the entire house. Why would you give them 3 separate prices? Because then they're going to be like, these are 3 expensive things. But if we do this as a one thing, like I'm doing all the counters for this one price, it makes it a lot easier for the customer.
Yeah, people like to bundle stuff together and get a good deal, man. And that's the best way to do it. I always price high. I'm higher now than we've ever been.
You have to. You got to be priced.
So like,
you really do.
We have our entry tub at $495, and I know I can get more. But what my goal really is to have the other stuff be more expensive. I want to get someone in the door with a 495 and then try to get them to do the tub and towel for 900. That's where we're at now. Mm. We started doing grout, and it's been fucking amazing,
man. Yeah, dude, there's quick drying grout, yeah. And it's been out there.
It's great. It's great. It, you know, it used to be a bitch because, you know, it's something new, and everyone is kind of like, oh, introducing something new and training everybody on it. Man, it's the easiest 200, 300, 400 bucks you'll ever make, bro. Like, it's so easy because we're not regrouting in a sense. We're just skim layering it so that the grout lines are clean. But we've also, it's opened the door to do grouting jobs. So,
and once you seal it, it's not like the grout's going to go bad. It's sealed behind it's our sealed, product. Exactly. So it's saved.
Man, we did a job and a shower, and the grout was just like a little old. And he's like, I want it regrouted in the same color. It looked exactly the same before and after, and he loved it. We charged him 700 bucks. It was a real regrout. All we did was grout it. I mean, like 700 bucks for something that took 4 hours is crazy.
Yeah, and think about how much money it cost you for that grout.
Exactly. Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, grout's pretty cheap too.
Grout is, yeah, now I'm thinking about it. You know.
Yeah. So
I started doing grout too.
I started adding that to my normal every day.
Yeah, I started doing grout recently because Danny told me a bunch of grouting jobs now.
Yeah.
It's a quick 500, 400 bucks.
And nobody wants to replace because once the grout gets bad, usually people are like, man, it's time for a new shower. Not in this day and age.
Yep. No. It makes the tub and tile or the shower just look perfect.
Brand new tile. Because you can get the tile back to its first day, yep. You know, being set in.
It looks,
and you put new grout on it, now you have a brand new shower again.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes people want to change the grout. If they have white tile with white grout, you put like a dark gray or something, it looks way nicer. So it's just, there's a lot of potential in that. But with the glazing jobs, man, it just, having those nice clean grout lines, it makes a world of difference. Customers don't bitch about it because we give them the option. Like, this is it with the grout, this is it without. And now when they complain about it, it's like, well, you didn't get the grout.
Well, our product is so good that if it's a perfect... if it's a perfect tile shower and you put your product over it, it looks just that much more perfect.
Yep.
You know, but once it's janky, your product goes over it, it basically points out all the flaws,
all the bad
in the shower. If you can fix that, you're solid. Yeah. You're solid. I've gotten away with a lot of things when it comes to the grout. I figured out this too. There's a quick drying mortar,
yep,
which is stronger than grout, way stronger than grout. Sometimes I put that mortar in instead of the grout, and it's dry in 15 minutes. I can start spraying.
Damn. That's a good tip. Yeah, because sometimes you don't really need to do the entire thing, you know. And that's the thing. We always give them the option because you never know.
Cup too. So you Yep. It's basically like doing like a little Bondo. Like you mix it up real quick with water instead of the Bondo extra element, and yeah, just mix it up with water. Let it set for like 2 minutes. Throw it on there. Wipe it clean with a sponge. It looks just like the grout. It's dry in 15 minutes.
You spray over it.
It's amazing.
I think one of the biggest game changers for us has been those upsells. And we don't go as hard as we probably should. That's going to change soon because I have one of my guys that's going to go more into a... I created a position for him. He's been here for almost 10 years. This is his ninth year with us. His name's Ralph. I've talked about him before. And I'm putting him on a schedule where he's only going to be doing refinishing 2 days a week. And the other days I'm going to have him do social media stuff and upsells. Go to job sites, look at what they're doing.
So you're basically putting a person in your position?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, I'm going to have them record the content. I'm still going to edit it because I like to do it. But I don't answer the phones and stuff anymore. My brother does that. I kind of delegated that to him. Trying to free myself up to do more big picture stuff. But one of the things I really want him to do is those little extra upsells. You know, if he sees a countertop, talk about it. But, hey, we could do that. Kitchen, cabinets, all that stuff that we do now and upsell. But even with just introducing the grout, the inlay system, I mean, bro, we've turned jobs that would have been $400 into $1,200, $1,300 jobs because we just mentioned that we do these extra things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a difference maker. And we also just started taking bigger deposits. We had an issue where, you know, we were doing like the $1 deposit thing for a while. It was like a minimal commitment for business with people. And we had a week where three people, two of them just straight up lied. I saw them write reviews for other companies. They lied saying they were sick. One of them lied to me about open heart surgery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm. And then he used Carlos, which was funny because I saw the review and I was like, well, good for Carlos, whatever. But he lied to me to try to get out of our cancellation fee. So I was like, you know what? Let's just charge 25% up front. And that's what we do now.
Did Carlos steal that job?
No. He didn't know. It wasn't even booked for him. It was booked for someone else. But the guy, I guess he got a quote from Carlos after me and was like, hey, he's doing it for a little less. I'm going to go with him. And how do I get out of paying this cancellation fee? Let me give him a sob story about my open heart surgery.
That's so wild.
That's fucking
wild.
That's
a wild thing to lie about, man.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that guy's healthy. I don't know.
Yeah, you know. Wow. Yep.
But people will do crazy things to get out of commitments. So what we did is a 25% non-refundable deposit. And we've had a few cancellations. And we tell them, no, you're not going to get the money back. We already brought the material. Nobody's complained. One lady, her deposit was $400. And she was like, there's no way I can get it back. And I was like, sorry, we bought the product already. Okay, I guess I'm just going to let it go then. That's it.
You could have just went with the job.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I said. I was like,
$400, man.
I told her, I'm like, if you want to do it in the future, we can apply a credit to your account. But aside from that,
smart.
We're not going to do it.
I've never taken a deposit. Ever. I've, I feel it off the person. You know, yep. I'll schedule them out. And I need to get, I keep them excited because after they pick a color, I go ahead and I send them examples of ones I've done when I left. I call them 4 or 5 days prior to the job. Get them pumped up. Hey, you ready for a new counter? Hey, you ready for a new tub? And then usually I can get it off their emotions right there. If they're still going to do it, they're super excited. If they're finicky about it, they'll be like, you know, we've did some thinking. Well, at least I give myself at least 4 or 5 days to put somebody in that spot.
One of the biggest things with us, and it's like I told you, I don't want – we used to not do it, and I used to wonder why people did it. For a long time, I always understood, like, okay, you know, time is money, whatever. I used to think it was bad business personally, but then my mindset changed when I started having multiple guys, because everyone wants to know what they're doing. They want to know what they're doing. The worst thing you could do to a tech or an employee of yours is send them to a job. The guy, oh, I changed my mind, and then you have to send them home with no pay. It's so fucked.
Yeah,
that's the worst.
And that is the reason I did it. I didn't do it for me. I did it for the guys, man. I want to make sure that when it's Monday, they see what they're doing Monday through Friday, and there's a deposit behind it. And I am still of the belief, I don't care what anybody says, I am either going to send them to help someone else on a job, or if there's nothing for them to do, I'm going to send them home and pay them anyway. Because it's not their fault that a customer might have canceled. That's why I'm doing the deposit. Because if the customer prepays $160, well, that covers most of the technician's pay for the day.
And I'm sure you tell that to your customers. Like, yeah, this is to pay my employee and pay for the material.
Exactly. And there's no refunding that. You know, I can't. Especially because we get busy. And one of the things that I look at, too, is like, you know, if I am scheduling 2 weeks from now and it starts to get closer and closer, it took a long time to get that momentum, right? And then if you don't have a deposit, you know, when you're doing multiple jobs, like I told you guys, sometimes we're doing 10 jobs in a day. If we're doing that much and two or three of them cancel, it derails the entire schedule. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we're doing multiple day jobs where, like, we need to do 4 bathrooms in a big ass house. That can mess up everything. There's no time to make up that many days if you're a week out. Mm-hmm. So that's why we do it. And I've had one case where I told one of my guys, hey, go help him on the other job. And even though he didn't need the extra help, but I had the extra money that I could pay him to help him with something that the guy really needed help for. But it made the guy's day a little bit quicker, which saves me a little bit of money on his hourly pay. So I was able to pay them both something respectable. You know what I mean? And not have to leave him hanging. But yeah, down the line, man, you know, it might be something. Right now, if it's working, it's working. I always say that the least amount of tension between you and the customer, the better. But I'm not going to lie. Most customers just expect it.
Yeah.
Once we started doing it, they're like, okay, where do I put the deposit? Like, it's become regular business practice, man. And that's shout out to the plumbers, bro. They're the ones that started all that shit.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. They're like, man, I remember the first time I ever heard of like that, pay the whole deposit up front thing. It was like an emergency plumber. They're like, yeah, we're not going to go out unless you pay me $200. And there's like a leak in my house. And I'm like, so I'm going to have to fucking do it, huh? And then they'll come. That's the thing I don't like. You know, we provide good customer service. I'm like, we'll be there in an hour. They get there 4 hours later. They already have your money. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Fucked. But anyway, yeah, we've implemented that. It's been a successful system. And it also, it does help get a little bit of cash flow ahead of time. If you're booking 6, 7, 8 jobs in a few days, you know, you collect all the deposits, you have a few grand up front that you could do something with, whether it's helping with ad spend, whether it's obviously buying the material, whatever you got to do. So it's been working well for us.
Nice.
And aside from that, man, I don't know, man. With the commercial stuff, what have you been doing? Apartments, hotels, how's that been going?
A lot of fiberglass inserts at a couple hotels have been cracking in the area. So I've been doing a lot of the inlays and stuff like that. Some of the tubs, just outdated, super, super old. Most rust spots are going to be around the overflow area. So a lot of grinding that out, ripping out old metal, filling it with the foam, like the same foam that you're using, the 2-inch crack one. And then I basically wait for that to dry, cut it, do the whole repair, refinish it, and typically by the end of the time, they're like, hey, we got two more for you.
Nice.
So it's, yeah, it's nonstop.
That's good, man. The commercial thing, man, like, and I always get asked, like, oh, you know, you do a lot of hotels. I'm at the point now where, like, that's not even my goal. Like, I get them, and I go to the hotels when they make sense.
Yeah.
Same things with apartments. There's guys out there that will do anything to get into a hotel. They'll cut their price to a fucking quarter of what they normally charge, and that's, like, the way I used to see it was like, oh, well, you make up with it with the bulk and like the volume of work. But
I make more money commercial though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell them like, cause you're no longer a free business owner. When you work commercial, you're on their time. Yep. Hey, I need this done by this day. Mm-hmm. So now you're having to schedule for them.
Yep.
I usually schedule for myself when it's residential. And sometimes like, let's say a customer.
Oh, so you make more money residential.
I make more money commercial.
Oh, commercial.
So we're doing the same thing with the tubs. Like they need me like, because they're usually always needing me last minute. Mm-hmm. Always.
Always.
They're always needing me last minute for something. Got to get somebody moved in here in about a week. Can you get me? So now I got to take in a Saturday. Yeah, that's fine, but I'm going to have to upcharge you because you're getting me last minute. And so I'm doing tubs for around $750.
Good. That's what I was going to get at is I shifted from needing the projects to I built such a solid residential base that I can pick and choose them.
Yep.
And the worst thing is like you need 20 grand. So you're going to go do twice the amount of work to make that 20 grand because you really need it. And then the moment something goes wrong, you lose the money because, you know, there's no margin left. That's how my parents used to do things. It's like, oh yeah, charge them 175 a tub. It's like the moment you go back, your margins are cooked.
Done.
There's nothing left.
And they're going to call you back.
They're going to call you.
Hotels always do it.
Yeah. And then you barely make any money and you have to put up with this headache of a hotel on your ass. Building this solid residential base, what it's allowed us to do is like have always at least a week and a half to 2 weeks booked out. I have all my guys working. We have an extra guy that could take on those last minute jobs. And when a hotel calls me on some last minute shit, I do that. Like, you want me to come tomorrow? You want me to come on Monday? It's going to be $750. We did a Ritz-Carlton near Naples. They begged us to go over there. So, you know, like the companies out here, they're not doing a good job. We've gone to like three or four of them. I sent a guy and I paid him 2 days to go over there, even though it only took him 1 day because the drive is crazy. From Naples to here is like 4.5 hours.
Yeah, that's nuts.
I was like, look, man, you know, go over there, do the tubs, come back, take the next day off, and I'll pay you the next day too. Because they paid like $1,000 for the tub. And we ended up doing two of them. So $2,000, two tubs, go.
Basically,
go,
you kept the same profit margin.
Exactly.
And yeah, he got a day off
work. And he got a day off work. And we looked good to them because they were really happy with it. Same thing with Disney here, man. I charged them $750 a tub.
Congratulations again with that. That's awesome.
Thank you. But it's these high-end places, they will pay. But you got to give them a reason. Your customer service needs to be on point. You got to be responsive. You got to, you know, like go along with the way that they do things. This doesn't mean that you like bend over to anything they're saying. But like if they say, hey, you know, when a guest is in the elevator, make sure you treat them with respect. Don't have your paint all over the place. Be clean. Like those little things, they're willing to pay more for that, especially the high end places. So with us, it's been the same thing, man. Like, we get these commercial places, and, man, with the inlays, I was telling him about it because we were talking about the inlays. We did one today, a measurement. I did a job for an apartment complex before I even knew about the inlays. We were putting cement under them. Like, cut it open, put cement, put the fiberglass back, bondo it, going super extra, and two of them cracked. It was, like you said, the bondo. The bondo is not, it's not meant for that.
It's not.
So
The bondo glass. So if you do a big thing, do a stick of bondo.
This is
a test I do for all bondos that are new that I'm going to be trying out. And I usually go into like a Advanced AutoZone, and they have a few selection over where I'm at. They probably have like five or six different types of Bondo. I've noticed that some of them are very flexible, and then some will just break the moment you put any bend to it.
Yep.
You can't use the ones that break, they put any bend to it at all, on any fiberglass.
Yeah.
They will break. It will crack.
Yeah, eventually it will.
And that's the problem we had, because the fiberglass bends so much already that it makes it forces the Bondo to crack. There's a tension point there that it just breaks. So we had this issue that they cracked right back open after we charged them $1,600 for these tub enclosures, just tub and surrounds, like the big fiberglass showers. We charged them $1,600 each for two of them. Messed up. So we were like, what are we going to do? I went back for free to test the inlays. It was the first time I ever used one. And I told them, I'm going to do this. Let it sit for a few months. Let me know if you have any issues with it, whatever. And they didn't have any issues. So they ordered like 12 more. We ended up doing so many of them, and I charged them $1,600 each for those things because I actually solved the problem. Because before they called me, they were calling local guys who were doing traditional repairs, foam, body filler, you know, sand and recoat, and without fail, they were cracking. And when I did I sold them on the cement. Oh, you know, there's going to be a real solution. And it fucking wasn't, man, and I looked so dumb. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this new thing I've heard of. I'm not even going to charge you for it. I'm going to do it for free this time because obviously I told you that it wasn't going to crack back open. So I tested it out, took the L for a month or two. But then when they called me back, bro, we did so much more work there. And it was because, you know, we tried that inlay system on that and it worked, man. So
yeah, and the fact that you went back and did it for free, a lot of people would just try to, like,
yeah,
get out of that. So
I show up again.
Yeah.
I show up again.
Yeah. But, I you know, with the commercial work, the way I saw it was like they were willing to take a $1,600 gamble on me. I'm going to try to make it right. And I did make it right. I found a real solution and now they know. And nobody else that they've called even told them anything close to the inlay system and how that works and stuff. And it actually worked at that property. So I found them a real solution and I didn't just run out with their fucking money. I could have done that. Most of the time I get commercial work though, it's that, man. It's like, I found the solution to a big problem that they had, or they needed someone last minute, and I was there.
Mm-hmm. I almost always do the froth packs under the fiberglass floors,
uh-huh,
because the way they expand and how much harder they are than the 2-inch. It's $70 for a froth pack, but a froth pack will do a 36x36 size floor pretty easily.
Yeah.
I screw holes in 9 parts of the floor where the inlay would cover, and I shoot the froth pack in each area, right? So now the entire floor is like a cement.
Solid.
It's solid. So it never has give. And I sell it as that, too. I said, you know how your floor has give right now? It's going to be hard as a rock. So it's going to be 10 times more durable. You could probably jump on it, and it'd have zero issues. But I don't warranty jumping.
So I you know, that's the thing, too, is like a lot of these issues shouldn't be issues. I mean, good thing that we have solutions to them, but like if the home builders did their freaking job and put mortar underneath the showers and tubs and set them correctly, there would be no need for all this.
Yeah. A bunch of inlays now are brand new apartments.
Yeah.
Brand new apartments being done.
That apartment complex I was telling you about where we did them for $1,600, it was built in 2015.
Yep.
That's exciting for us.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, I did a bunch of shower floors. It opened last year. All their shower floors cracked.
Yeah.
Brand new. They didn't even get to use it.
The only ones that don't crack most of the time are the ones that are on floor level because they have the cement right there. But when they build the upstairs units, it's like they don't put anything underneath them.
Yep, nothing.
And they crack like nothing. You know what's funny is that we did an inlay once. It was a really old house from like the 70s. I told my guy, do the thing, shoot the foam, whatever, put the inlay. He's like, yeah, I can't shoot foam under it. Like there's no... like there's cement under there. I'm like, yeah, because the house was built from the fucking 70s, of course. They used to do stuff like that. Now it's just like the builders are trying to get in and out. They build the house in 5 minutes, man. Like,
yeah, but that's good for us, man.
It is.
Awesome.
Good for us.
Keep messing up.
Yeah, but that's good. So the door-to-door stuff you were doing, door knocking and all that, how did that go?
Well, it started in a neighborhood I was just living in. So my opening would be like, hey, I'm your new neighbor. I live right down the street. I'm just going door to door. Say hello. I own a refinishing business. Give him a card. Talk to him about it. I had a better spiel at the time. But, yeah, just talk to him for 5 minutes. Most of the time, they wouldn't open the door. Yeah. But I've gotten like 2 or 3 sales out of it. Every single one of the sales, it was a no at first, but I left my card. I ended up getting called later still. So
what was your strategy to get the commercial work? Was it the same thing, kind of door knocking in person at the places?
So I went to management companies. I knew a couple of realtors, and I got to talking to them, and they said that they knew some management companies they're going to give my information to. And sometimes I would go do it, but I had to you had to go through a whole credential process.
Yep.
So basically give them all your insurance, W-2, all that stuff, make sure you're legal.
Vendor Cafe and Net Vendor.
Yep, they made me download that and get all that. But now I have that for all the other places I could utilize that. So it works out.
That's good, man. I always tell people too, because that's another thing I get asked a lot. And the reason I'm mentioning is because I'm glad that you went out and it worked for you. Going door to door isn't just like door knocking houses. You know, you could go door to door. Like you said, property managers, apartments, hotels. The first hotel I ever got was cold calling. I cold called like 86 hotels in a row until one of them said yes. Like they picked up and they're like, yeah, we'll try you. And then we did a project. Like being persistent pays off. It's like anything, you know, like you go to the fucking gym. The persistence of going every day and trying to achieve what you want to achieve is how you get the result. It's the same thing could be applied to anything. That the problem is people don't want to wait. It's like what we talked about way in the beginning. That instant gratification kills people, bro.
Absolutely. Instant gratification can look as simple as getting on your phone and finding memes to laugh at or a video to find, you know. It's killing the time that you could be utilizing to grow or work on yourself.
Yeah.
And in order to grow your business, inevitably, it all comes from within you.
Yep.
So working on yourself is the only way you're actually going to get to the next level to grow your business. So it starts with you.
Yeah, and a lot of it is mentality too, man. These guys, for you being 2 years in business and being where you are, you have that mentality of like, I know it's not going to happen today. I know it's not going to happen tomorrow, but it's going to happen. And then it starts to happen faster when you think that way.
Absolutely.
If all you do is fucking dwell on what's not working, that's when you fuck up.
It's called victim mentality.
It is. Yep. Yeah. For sure. It stalls growth in every way, mentally, emotionally, physically, everybody. You know, at the end of the day, if you don't go out and get it, no one's going to go get it for you.
Absolutely.
And that's like the most important thing. I always tell people, everybody wants like a quick fix. Everyone's like, how do you get these hotels? Like if I have some secret freaking app that I just pull up and they just fall out of the fucking sky.
Hard work.
That's how it is. Yeah. You develop a reputation. You go to these places. Regardless of where I'm at in business, I still make time to talk to the people I've met. I go to networking events. I meet people in hotels. Like, I do these things. And sometimes I'm like, do I really need to do this? But then I always think of, like, what happens if one day it's not there anymore? What happens if the connections you made one day retire? Like, you need to be on top of it. And that's why we continue to grow and expand. And also just having fucking goals, bro. One of my biggest goals of all time was to get into Disney. And it wasn't even because of the amount of work, because like they call us as needed. It's good work. Like we get a few tubs a month. Usually they do about 7 a month at this hotel because their occupancy is crazy. But for me, it's like, what does Disney stand for as a brand? Right. And they stand for quality. They stand for like exceptional customer service. If I have my brand aligning with that, what does my brand look like?
It's going to look amazing.
Exactly. And that's the big thing. It's like, for me, a lot of it is the vanity of it. I don't really care if I'm doing tubs at Disney. I care about what my brand working with Disney says about my company.
Absolutely.
That's the most important. That's going to get you further than a lot of people think. You know, I'm not over here doing a million tubs a month. We do a good amount of work with them, but that to me is valuable. When I'm able to tell a customer, yeah, we do the tubs at Disney, they're like, really? Even they get excited about it. So yeah, same thing with Universal. We've done work with them. It's a similar thing.
It's an extra trust variable
exactly
to the company, to the person that you're giving work for. They're gonna be able to look at this as, oh, this is real. This is legit. You know, yep. I don't have to really question it anymore because I know I'm going to get quality service.
Exactly. And when you work at a hotel or an apartment complex, a lot of these complexes that are smaller are owned by a big conglomerate apartment management company. So you could tell them, like, hey, I work for this company, by the way. And they're like, oh, well, if you work for them, it just, it's, they know them. They don't know you. But if you say, hey, like, hey, I work with these people and you know them, they get excited. And naturally, it elevates the brand. Is basically what I'm getting at.
I found out early on, I would say within the first 2-3 months, I noticed when because I was posting all my before and afters and my stuff on my personal page, and that was getting traffic. I thought about how is that going to create a good business. So basically, I'm the eye of my business, and that wasn't a good thing. That's not what I wanted. So I put all the focus onto branding my business. Like, how can I do this to where, you know, I can make this as successful without eyes on me as much as possible, right? And basically, I would do everything through my business page. So Facebook for my business page became my actual Facebook. I would share motivational quotes on my stories. I would get people interacting to where I started to grow from that, and people started to see, oh, this is a business owner. He has his own business. Now I got 3,700 followers on my business page.
Wow.
Yeah, nice. So it's growing. It's
good. So that's personal branding. Personal branding is undervalued. I don't do it as well as I should, but I do make it a point to where on my page, I show my fucking face. I feel like it's important to put a face to the brand. The biggest companies in the world do it. You know, we know Bill Gates because of Microsoft. We know Steve Jobs because of Apple. We know Elon Musk because of Tesla. And what happens is that the individual supersedes the brand after a certain stage, right? Like Elon Musk can leave tomorrow. And if he bought Hooked on Refinishing, you'd be on the S&P 500 before lunch, bro.
For sure.
Because he's Elon Musk, right? Sure. That's the thing, is like people don't see the value in like showing their face or talking to their customer and to their client base. But it is probably the most valuable thing you could do, because most people don't do it. So there you go. You're already looking different. You know, everyone can post a before and after, but when you put yourself out there, there's no more running, right? There's no fear that this company is just going to pack up and leave, and there's no accountability. There's a human being there showing his face. It takes some balls to do that, because you got to be uncomfortable with it a little bit, because it's just weird. It's not natural to anybody. But once you get over the hump of like, okay, well, some people might not like what I have to say or like my face or care for the video. What it does do is it just makes you your own brand. And then when you want to go do something in the future, you get known for that. That's why I like, we were talking before about the caricature and stuff like that. There is good in associating a person with a brand. Now, you don't want the brand to just be the person,
that's
right?
That's the fear, yeah.
That's what I understand from you, is like if your company was called Jack's Refinishing, and then someone named like Julian shows up, they're like, where the hell's Jack?
Yep.
You know?
Jack here, bro.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, that's when it gets to a point. That's why a lot of people don't ever grow past a certain extent. Like you know, there's companies like Mike's Plumbing. How many Mike's Plumbings are there? 50,000 of them. You know, like, but when you have Hooked on Refinishing and you show a little slice of Jack to the person, it's like, okay, well, I know him. This is his company. I know a little bit about him. I know that he owns it, but I know that this is just a thing that he owns and he does and he operates. It's a little bit easier for in the future, like you said, when you expand and stuff, to not necessarily have them being like, where's Jack? They know. It's like a thing you own. Right.
Absolutely. And I've seen businesses get canceled due recently to sharing their political views, yep, and things, yep, like that. And, you know, I've noticed the growth in myself, because I used to be that political guy. I throw all my beliefs out there on Facebook. I started a business. I realized, man, if I were to even do this once, this could ruin me.
Yeah,
this,
man,
could absolutely ruin you.
You say anything, man. You're cooked.
Yeah. It's the thing is, man, people... Everybody wants to be authentic, and it's not about not being authentic. It's about knowing when to read the context of the situation.
Being professional.
Exactly. Like, you know, what did our parents teach us, man? Like, you don't talk about politics. You don't talk about religion.
Yeah.
Like those are just old school values out of respect for one another, right? You know? Yep. And when you get to know someone better, okay, whatever. But at the end of the day, there's a transaction being made here. They need something. You need something. You bring that variable into it, you're going to polarize them. They're not going to know. Like, if they can trust you.
I mean, if they have it all in the back of their truck as you're walking up, you can kind of...
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? You can blow their heads up.
And what also what it does is that it just... Where are your priorities? Mm-hmm. Like, do you want everyone to know that you're following this politician and that you're a big, you know, fan of them? Or do you want to get business done? Like, why would you conflate the two things? One thing has nothing to do with the other.
Yeah, and so how I portray myself is as a completely open individual. When it comes to my Facebook, all I share are things that are going to help an individual out there. Yep. And it's relatable to every person on the planet. So if that means it's some philosophy meme that I posted, not a funny meme that yep. could be slightly dark, that now takes away from 50% of the people that are on my friends list.
Yep.
But the only things I'm posting are grown up. I just didn't grow up until I started a business, yep. honestly.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
And this is another thing to consider, man. And in everybody's head, all your problems and your beliefs are the only thing, right? Because we only think for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Maturing is realizing that other people come from other walks of life. They might look at things differently. And everything you believe might not always be right and vice versa. So it's better to just not talk about it, because there nothing that they say is going to change your mind, and nothing you can say is going to change their mind. Everyone's stuck in their beliefs to an extent.
Absolutely.
So it's just better to avoid that. I did a podcast recently because I'm going to start another podcast about business in general. And I want to have other people on. And I had this duct cleaning company on. The first episode we did, everything was business related. The second one, they wanted to talk about politics. And it just got way too political. I just told them, like, I'm not going to post this. I'll post the first one. Cool. That's fine. It got way too political. And it's like, even though I enjoy those discussions off camera to an extent, because I think it's funny, like, I don't take it too serious, but even being in it, I'm just like, no one is going to find this interesting. All it's going to do is polarize whoever watches it. Either you're on side A or side B, and like, whatever side B says is going to piss off side A, whatever side A says is going to piss off side B. So it's like, why are we even talking about that?
Once you understand someone's belief system, at that point, anything that comes out of their mouth after that, your view of them on anything they say is going to be 100% different.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, if your views match up, good. You may have got an extra customer or a friend in your life. But if it doesn't, now this person is probably not going to trust anything that's coming out of your mouth, even if it is truth.
One of these refinishing groups on Facebook that I follow had one of their guys like refer to like Middle Eastern people in a questionable way. And like open about it, like talking about, you know, like just talking about them talking a certain way. And I was just like, why? Everybody was like, what the f*** is this guy doing? Like, and they didn't kick him out of the group or anything. To me, that shit's just crazy. How do you present yourself as a professional? Like, these are the same guys that are the nerds about paint and stuff. Like, they think of themselves highly. And I'm not saying they're not, but like when you go and just like talk openly on a forum that has nothing to do with that, about something like that, it's just like, where's your head at, man?
Yeah. Seeking attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Bro, that guy might be your freaking customer for all you fucking know, man. Like, when it's business, I have no affiliation.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to bring it up because it's not worth it to me. I want my business to be business, just like I want my personal life to be my personal life, and whatever I believe is what I believe, and that's a separate thing. So I definitely agree with that, man. I've seen a lot of that. And like you said, on their trucks, you know.
Oh, gosh.
You see some stuff, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Any questions for us, man? Have anything, you know, that you've been thinking about, you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. So I've always been a person that I stick to, I'm branding. When I like something, I don't think it's broke, shouldn't fix it, stick with this.
Okay.
Been Graco product guy forever. If I were to continue doing the countertops, tub, and tile, I do like Graco, but for some reason I feel everybody's using Titan.
Yep.
And would you say Titan is just as good?
Yes.
Yes, so you wouldn't say there's a difference. So me switching to Titan, I wouldn't be downgrading the ability.
No, you just got to make sure. What do you know how much stages your HVLP is? Is it a 4-stage,
5-stage?
Okay, so you just got to get the Titan equivalent. That way you're not going to have any drop-off in performance.
Okay.
Which I believe is the Titan 115 or the 105. Regardless, they say if it's 5-stage, the compressor will tell you. It says it on there.
Yeah, most compressors come with a gun too, I think.
Yeah, they come with a gun too. So if you wanted to play with it, you know, that's a good way. They sell the attachment for the PPS system. I know Graco has their own like PPS system. But the other one, you know, they sell the attachment for it, and then you just buy the pressure cup and the liners and you're good to go. I think, look, the thing about Titan, in my opinion, is that the accessibility seems a little bit more. Like, most people use it because it's a combination of price point, performance, and like availability, right? Like, it is a really, really, really good system. My biggest qualm about it is that back in the day, and this is never going to change, back in the day, they used to be made better. The compressors used to be made of metal. I have some in the back. The old cap spray systems were freaking elite, man. They were made out of steel. You would drop it, nothing would happen. These new ones, the cases are made out of plastic. That's like a big hang-up. The only other problem, too, is that the switches on them go bad. But that's just like a power on and off switch. So what most guys do is that they'll always just leave it on and just plug it in when it's on. So that the moment you plug it in, it just turns on. Or they'll hardwire the connector behind the scenes, which is like, it's like one cable and one cable. If you tie them together, they'll just always be on. Oh, or Carlos uses a switch. He has a switcher that he plugs into the outlet. So he'll put the three-prong connector into the switch, plug that in, and then he has a little remote that he just clicks and it'll turn it on.
Nice.
But Titan's performance with their compressors is fantastic. The filters last a long time. And it's built really well. I've heard of Graco systems overheating. I have never had that issue with a Titan. I was reading the other day in that Facebook group that I was telling you about. Somebody had a Graco system that was new, and apparently some of the new ones have a weird thermostat issue that will just shut it off. So you have to like spray in intervals and turn it off.
Well, this is what mine. I have the Pro Contractor, which is their best series. I have the 7.0. The 9.0 heats up a little bit too much. It atomizes your product a little too fast. So the 7.0, I think, is perfect. So there's two stages on the switch. One switch when you turn it on. So you have the hose, and it comes up to a valve that you can turn on and off your air supply to the gun.
Yeah.
Right? First, that's what I use. It's the attachment. So when there's no airflow, but you have the machine running, it will shut off until you open up the valve. Okay. Once it allows airflow, it turns back on. So when I'm done spraying, all I have to do is shut the valve.
And it shuts off.
And the whole unit, 50, 60 feet away from me, shuts off. I don't need to walk out the room or anything like that. So it saves you time, because sometimes when you're busy running through things, you'll leave it on, continue to do things. So while it's shut off, it's not heating up.
What about if you see, this is the question I had about that, because if you're using a non-bleeder gun, right, the ones that have airflow that only come out when you hit the trigger. So what happens then? Does it shut off if you're not pulling the trigger?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So that might be the issue that people are having, is that, because I know Graco stuff works best with Graco stuff. They might be using a Graco compressor with a different gun, and for whatever reason, when that airflow isn't coming out, the compressor's off, and then when they pull the trigger, it turns right back on.
That's exactly what's going
on. And it's messing up. It's messing them up.
I don't think it's so. I think it's their gun's not equipped to handle that compressor, probably.
Yeah, it's probably a compatibility thing.
Yeah, it's just a compatibility issue.
I do say, though.
You just solved it for them, though.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. But I will say, man, we never have really had an issue with Titan long term. They've always been good. They hold up well. Another thing too that we started using is we use a different type of blower now. This new one called a X-axis or something like that. These big blue ones to extract the fumes. These things are like jet engines, man. They suck everything.
Gotta out of show the room. Me then,
man. They're great.
12 inch still?
Yeah, they're still 12 inch. The housing is plastic, which I like more. It's lighter. It's easier to freaking clean up and maintain. You know, the other ones are like metal and bulky.
Yeah.
And the RPM is like twice the other one.
Really? It's like 2,700 RPM for the yellow one, right?
Yeah. It's way faster.
Really?
When you turn it on, it sounds like a jet engine. But it is great, because when you're spraying, there's no overspray in there.
Yep.
So, because it just takes it out so quick. So that's another thing. And the good thing about this one too is that if you're in a commercial setting or you're spraying something to tie up and you have two of them, you can stack them. They have a little slot to be stacked.
Yeah, you show me them.
Yeah. So you can keep the hose on just one, but having the other one is going to help the air come down. See what I'm saying? It's going to help feed that overspray into the system.
What's is there? Are they compatible with the same hose?
Yes.
Really? Wow! Yep. I just bought a new 33 foot hose, so I'm excited. Yeah,
that's what I do too.
My favorite things.
I have the guys with 230s and then 115 in case they need a little extra.
That's what I do.
And that's pretty much it. But yeah, man, that's been another thing that we started using, and it's been a big difference maker. It just helps keep the job sites cleaner, man. And, you know, they're lighter. Take up a little bit less space.
Make sure you use one of your extension poles. That's what I use. I usually just use that. And I have three of those hoses stacked up in the extension pole. So I can just carry three hoses on one extension pole without putting my arms inside of it to carry it around.
That's
stuff.
Smart.
So just put on an extension pole and you just throw it in the truck. It doesn't go anywhere. It won't fly out the truck.
Nice. I had a tech that I use. He subs work for me sometimes. And he masks the bathrooms with those tension rods that they're used for cabinets.
I don't use tension rods in bathrooms.
Bro, he masks the bathroom like that. And it's kind of genius. I'm not even going to lie to you. Because what he does is that he'll use like the drop cloth plastics and he'll use the tension rod and it'll just seal off that entire wall of the bathroom. So then he just papers around the tub, puts a drop cloth, and instead of having to tape anything, just use the tension rods to hang the plastic up, and then he takes it out and could reuse it.
It's pretty smart.
That is freaking smart.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I thought it was done for a
second.
Anything
to save money, man.
Oh,
that's smart.
Yeah, that's very smart.
I was so surprised.
I use 99-inch plastic everywhere now. When I'm doing under counters, I'll use 48, but everywhere, just 99 the whole room.
Are you using the ones that go on the hand masker?
Yeah, I always use hand maskers.
Okay.
I'm typically spending more. When it comes to the prep,
are you buying the 3M one?
Out of comfortability, yes. I know.
I got you.
Please get me. Yeah, bro, that'd be great.
I got a good connect. I got some product stuff that I wanted to show you too. Now that you're here, just cheaper stuff you could use that's good quality.
Yeah, I would like to go probably just over your whole basis in here.
Yeah, yeah, we'll do that. All right. Any other questions, concerns, comments?
That's it, man. Thank you for having me. It's been awesome.
Yeah, man. It's been good, man. And hopefully we'll do another one soon, and I'll have Jonathan here too because I know he wanted to meet you. He had some questions and stuff, but. We'll do that another time. All right, guys. We're going to go ahead and end it here.
Awesome.
All right, man.
You've been listening to the Bathtub Refinishing Podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to keep up with the Bathtub Guys on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Or visit bathtubguys.com for more. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.